morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Oh, excellent. Very good. Very good. Because if you don't speak, I have to make you wave and it looks a bit sad, really. Who am I? I have a hospitality background. I did hospitality with business management, as our colleague over there. And I ran a hotel, worked for Compass, got conned into running a recruitment agency, don't ask me how, made a good job of it and decided to start my own business. And what we do is we work with organisations to help them become a great place to work, thus attracting talent and so on and so forth. I also have a software business which has an award-winning talent management programme that companies put in to help people drive their own progress. So that's me. I just want to talk to you about three things today, keep it quite simple. I'm going to see if we can catch up the time a little bit because we've started a bit late. I want to just quickly explore some of the issues with you. Then I want to talk about the best way to attract talent and to make sure you have a sustainable talent pipeline. And then I'm just going to touch on Generation X and Y because on Generation Theory I was asked to do it. And I know Henrik's got lots of other things to add on to that when I've done my bit. So, without further ado, oh, it's not going to happen, is it? Seamlessly segueing into the presentation. There you go. Oh, there you go. Okay, you know this stuff, but I just think to frame the morning. Really good is no longer good enough in terms of service. You have to have the right people doing the right things with love, joy and song in their hearts to be able to deliver the right service. You can't just hand them this, you know, operating manual and say that's how we do service. And I'm working with a company at the moment where we've taken 1,300 pages of how to deliver service in this business down to, you know, some very, very simple messages that you could probably write down on two pages if you wanted to. Because everything is faster, people want more, it's got to be delivered, you've got to be able to turn on a sixpence, and I think that's really, really important. People have moved on from service, they want memorable customer experiences. So what was it that made me want to stay there? It's not because the bed was nice and all the rest of it. It's because somebody did something amazing. I was in the Novotel last night. The receptionist was running out with a tenner to go and buy somebody a plug because they'd only brought their French plug and, you know, was absolutely legging it up the road. So this woman had her plug in time for a presentation. That's a memorable service experience. It's not just doing the norm. Talk about the multi-everything workforce. This is my word for diversity, which is increasing in terms of age, in terms of culture, and all the things that go around that. And certainly when we look at the generations, and it's how you balance all of that and really, really make it work for you under one message, one goal. And that's quite tricky. And I think that's an issue that all managers and leaders are going to have in the future. Clearly, we have economic pressures. And as we come out of the recession, please God, everybody's going to be fighting for that talent again. And what you have got, on the other hand, are people who are fed up of working twice as hard, losing their colleagues, worrying all the time, being married to someone who's lost their job. You know, people are pretty on their knees at the moment in the UK and other places. And I think we've got to find a way to bring everybody back up again and then keep them there so that all the people that are, you know, fighting for the talent don't win over. Joined up thinking we'll talk about later. And cultural values is my favourite topic, but Henrik's going to talk about that. So that's cool. this is very old research, and I'm not in the... Sorry, you can't see if I'm on there. I'm not really in the business of showing you things that are out of date, but I just wanted to show you this because of what's happened since then. You can all read that, so I'm not going to explain. Can you all see the words at the back? Do you want me to... Yeah, okay. So since Corporate Leadership Council did this study and said, as an overview, that about 20% of the workforce was disengaged. And what does disengaged mean? Anybody want to tell me? Come on, because I'm not going to do it all up here. But we haven't got much time, so you have to tell me quick. What does being disengaged? What's engaged? What's an engaged person? Yeah, so disengaged, you don't really care. You know, at worst, you're kind of sabotaging the organisation. At best, you were asleep in a corner, not really doing any work. So that's what disengage means. And clearly, you'd want your workforce to be engaged, singing the company song, leaping out of bed in the morning, happy to be there, yeah? So what's happened since 2008 is the number of people that are actively disengaged, so possibly sabotaging your organisation, has doubled, which is a bit of a scary thought that 40% of your organisation might be sabotaging it, and that's why we have to do something about it. So very quickly, because we haven't got loads of time, this is another bit of research by Blessing White, same sort of figures. What people tend to do is put all of their efforts into converting the disengaged, okay? But if you're going to do that, it's very, very hard work. And given that they are possibly poisoning the whole rest of your workforce, what do you need to do with them? Get rid of them. And I'm not also in the business of saying go around sacking people, but if they are poisoning your organisation, the first thing you do is try to convert them, but don't spend 2 years doing it. And if they can't be converted, you find an equitable way to exit them, because it doesn't work. All right, what do you think the honeymooners are? New people. What are hamsters? Going round and round in circles, not really getting anywhere. Crash and burners. You know, the really brilliant people who have just had enough, and we've got loads of them at the moment because of the recession. And the almost are engaged might be new people as well, or might be just people that cut a lapse in and out of being totally engaged. And where people need to put their efforts are into these middle bits. You know, sort out the crash and burners, give them a new challenge, do something different, change their hours, give them more flexibility. The honeymooners, get them up there, induct them properly, train them properly, give them mentors. Hamsters, get them off the wheel and give them purpose. And it's much, much easier to do that than to start converting the ones at the bottom. Does that make sense? And all of this, why is this to do with sustainable pipeline? Because if you haven't got the sort of organisation where people can thrive, there is absolutely no point putting all the effort into employer brand, marketing your company, getting them in, engaging them, for them only to go into the workforce and be corrupted by the disengaged. Make sense? Yep. Grand. Thank you. Okay, so this is how to find and sustain a sustainable pipeline. It's become a great place to work. And that sounds, you know, a few words for a very, very difficult task. However, if you don't break it down, and that's a really busy slide for which I apologise, I would say you should never have a slide that's bigger than you'd put on the top front of a T-shirt, but that one, you'd have to be XXXL, really, wouldn't you? If you become a great place to work, and as an example, we've got several clients who are in Sunday Times Top 100. It was out last week, did you see it? Or this week, this Sunday, some of them actually. And once they got into the Sunday Times Top 100, they don't have to advertise, they don't have to market themselves to employees. Every graduate who's looking for that kind of job is putting in application after application, and they can cherry pick the best people. So to me, it makes total sense that if you want a sustainable pipeline, that you get things right and make it a great place to work where people can contribute, where people can progress, and people can be happy and do what they like doing. We had a conversation over dinner last night about doing what you like doing. If you're not, it's very, very difficult to perform, yeah? So this is a really busy slide that says, this is when people first hear about you in the marketplace. So if you're a great place to work, people will hear about that because people get on the Facebook and go, what's it like to work at the co-op? And people go, it's great, come and work here. We've got great eco policies or whatever. Yeah. So this is really, really, really important. And people are already thinking about, you know, everybody wants to work for Google, everybody wants to work for Apple, so on and so forth. And then this is the bit when people start to be immersed in your culture. And culture, for me, is the bit that people sometimes miss and mismatch and take the wrong people because they recruit on skill, not on attitude. And fitting in with an organisation's culture does not mean cloning. It means finding common values. So your personal values, which you haven't worked them out, that's a whole other lecture, but if you haven't worked them out, work them out, because you need to know what sort of organisation you will fit in, because of the things that are important to you. So if ethics are important to you, don't go and work in a cigarette company. Now, that's a very, very simple explanation, but, you know, anything in between that. So culture and DNA throughout the organisation, and all this is the employee journey. So they start to get immersed in the culture. They're attracted in, maybe because they've heard about you, maybe because they see your ads, and they see your recruitment ads or whatever way you're doing it. And, you know, if we have more time, I can give you loads of examples than that. And if you want some afterwards, just email me, jane@learnpurple.com. The selection process, what's that like? And again, you know, lots of examples of where that can be made really fun and funky and cool and not just dull and boring, because you want to engage people and want them to work in here. And what you are doing is beginning to engage them right at this stage before they even get to you. So you decide you're going to take them on. Before they join, there's loads of stuff you can do as leaders before people join you to get them up to speed, enthused, expecting to be challenged, all of those things. People just miss out on this stuff and do the same old boring stuff, so I implore you to read my book. It's all in there. It's only cheap, so you get all the answers without having to pay for them, which would be good. And you know, through induction and through this whole bit in the middle, which if you can't read it at the back, I'm sure they'll let you have the slides because I don't want to dwell on this too much. But a sustainable pipeline, you have to have a joined-up talent management strategy. You cannot have learning and development over here, recruitment over there, and somebody else doing policy down here. It has to be joined up. And it's not only the HR department. You have to join up with marketing. You have to join up with finance so that you can fund things. I'm going to mention HR tools. Most of these processes now, you can automate the back end, the nuts and bolts, so that you can concentrate on making the front end, the interaction, really, really cool, because that's what you need to do. So, you know, recruitment could be so much better if everybody did it online, and so many companies don't do that. They get all the CVs and they wade through, and it's, like, so dull. So, you know, in order to invest and market and so on and so forth, HR directors cannot just sit in their office and do HR stuff. They have to go and learn about marketing. They have to learn about finance so they can go to the board and put forward a compelling bottom line based argument on why they should invest in HR technology. Does that make sense? Yeah. Cool. Okay. Right. I'm very short on time now, so I'm just going to tip over into this. What do you know about generation theory? Do you know, like, put your hand up if you know everything and I'm just going to bore you to death? No hands. Excellent. Right, generation theory, do not get too hung up on this stuff. There are no hard and fast rules. So, for instance, I'm certainly not a Generation Y, but I feel I often behave like one, occasionally like a Z. So don't worry too much about the dates and who's who. It's about understanding that the basis of generation theory is that as one grows up in a certain economic climate with certain cultural references and so on and so forth, then you're going to have a different view of the world. Clearly. So I don't worry about the dates too much, but I'll show you what they are anyway. I do it by music. So if you bought your first bit of music on vinyl, you are, unless you're really trendy and you're a DJ, in which case you wouldn't be, you probably are a baby boomer, yeah? If you bought your first bit of music on a tape, then you are probably a Generation X, but maybe CDs, early CDs, yeah? If you are Generation Y, you probably got it on iTunes. And Z, I mean, these are my predictions for Z, so it's kind of meant as a bit of fun rather than, written in stone. You probably downloaded it for free before anybody else had heard of it anyway, because that's what they do. I don't know. Anybody got kids? Yeah, I've got teenage kids, and they know everything. They've seen every movie that's not even out yet. Free. Now. It's all immediate. And clearly, that sort of cultural reference is going to change the way they view the world and the way they view work. Now, I'll just talk about this before I show you my really embarrassingly busy slide, because I want you to just be able to have a bit of detail without me having to talk about it through it. So if you think, if you're a baby boomer, so you grew up in the post-war years, austerity, there was quite a lot of respect for hierarchy, you went to your first job, you were like, I'll do anything for you, you know, throw it at me, pay me hardly any money, it's fine, I'll just do it because I need the job, yeah? You would never have said, how much holiday can I get? You would never have said, can I finish early on a Wednesday to go to my Spanish lesson? It just didn't happen. Lots of respect for hierarchy, lots of autonomy, those kind of influences. The Generation X, they call the divorce generation, because all of these people then who would never have got divorced because it just wasn't going to happen, they all then decided, actually, this is a bit dull in the way to live. Let's all, you know, give a little and be a little less... responsible, a little bit more selfish in a way.
Basically, so share the tape collection.
Yes, yeah, yeah. So exactly. So Generation X tend to be a little bit more for themselves because they've had to grow up and be tough. I mean, I'm giving you a day's information in 10 minutes here. So if you don't know this stuff, go and read up on it because it is very interesting. I mean, you know, I didn't make it up. It's established out there. And then Generation Y, of course, you've had the internet, which is a massive, massive thing. Generation Y can find any piece of information they want now. So leaders say to me, oh, but they want to be a manager so soon and they don't want to put the experience in. See, I don't believe they need all that experience anymore. You need some experience, obviously. You need life experience. You need skills like problem solving and being able to communicate, which Generation Y are actually not very good at because they're very external in the way they make decisions, which means they ask everybody, shall I dye my hair pink or Cheryl Cole brown? Well, I'll get on my Facebook and I'll ask 100 people and then all come back and tell me their opinion. And that means that people just are not learning those kind of skills of internal reference where they can make their own decisions. Does that make sense? And so, ditto teamwork. You know, they can work well as a team remotely. They're not very good when they all get in a room. I am generalising here. I accept that. But I know I see it all the time. Generation Y, yeah, they've got this great access to information, but they've also got access to loads of conflicting information. Because if you ask six people one question, you might get six different answers. If you go on the internet and ask that one question, you could get 6 million different answers. So we have to teach them to be able to do what's right for them, which is about knowing themselves. And we're very, very in danger of groupthink with Generation Y. Yeah? So, and oh my goodness, One Direction, those boys from 1D. Generation Z, they are kind of the Generation Y one on, where they really, you know, have everything to hand from being 8 years old. They've got a mobile phone. They've got everything on there. They're watching the movies on it in class. I mean, it is, how are they ever going to speak to people? They do not speak. They don't go out playing. They don't do much social stuff. They just sit there and do it online, and they do everything virtually. So if you want to then stick them behind a bar and get them to converse with people, it's going to be a challenge. And I'm not saying they can't do that, but it is going to be a challenge, particularly because of parental, input. You know, there are some parents who will make sure they've got those skills. I read last week about the woman who was feeding her 3-month-old baby a cheeseburger mashed up. And, you know, those parents possibly aren't going to teach them those skills.
I've actually had a class, I'm teaching as undergraduates, I call it the art of conversation.
Excellent, because absolutely. We all need the art of conversation.
I've discovered that they cannot initiate a conversation.
No. Exactly. No, it's true. Mm-hmm. And they don't look at you either because they've always got their earphones in and they've always got their heads down. So it's very hard to have a conversation. They just grunt, you know. I text my kids when the tea's ready because they don't want to talk to me and they've got earphones in anyway. You know, it's very, very difficult. So I think, you know, of all the things you're going to learn in university, learn some of these practical things because it is going to be worrying. And if we don't do something about it now, we're heading for a bit of a trial. So this is my embarrassingly busy slide. Which just compares, so for instance, I've not put Generation X on here, but that's in my next book. Baby boomers, you know they've done a good job, have got an internal reference frame. Generation X like regular feedback. Generation Y want loads of feedback now. And, you know, I employ loads of graduates. You know, my average age of my workforce, I've only got a few, 20 people or something, is about 25. And we have to sit them down and say, you will not get all of the feedback you want because we're not going to give you feedback every time you do something. We will give you feedback at the right time, at formal times. Or if you do something amazing that we're not expecting you to do, then we'll give you that feedback. Or if there's something we'd like you to work on. But, you know, you have to frame this. When people come and work for you, you have to realise that they don't see things the way your generation might. Or for you wise, your boss isn't going to see it the way you do. So I suggest you read up and see, these kind of lists, just what their attitudes are. Because when you get a Y working for a boomer, and I see this all the time, there is always conflict. Or the Ys come away thinking, oh, they just don't understand me and, you know, I don't feel I'm getting anywhere. And the boomers are going, oh, they want everything now. It's ridiculous. You know, I would never have said that. That's life. And I spend my life saying to people, you know, you've got to grow up and accept that this is the way it is. You're not going to convert people, so work with it. Yeah? Any more on here? Can't see the buttons. Okay, yeah. Baby boomers, keep their opinions to themselves. You don't know what they're thinking because they're just, you know, self-reliant and all the rest of it. Xs, share their opinions. Ys, think you want to know their opinions. In fact, know you want to know their opinions. I get loads of people saying, oh, this is what, MD said to me, CEO said to me last week, oh, this person's written me a letter, you know, with some feedback. Why didn't they write it to their manager? And I said, because they want you to know. They think you want your opinion. And absolutely, why not? That was a valid opinion that CEO wouldn't have got. But there's this sort of ridiculous respect for hierarchy where people think it should go through channels. It's not like that now. The world is very flexible. Yeah. I really am out of time. I wouldn't be doing my job if I'm slightly flogging my book. But we do everything in threes at Learn Purple. So if you take three things out of this session today, certainly think about personal values and how they fit in with the culture of the company you are thinking of working for or work in. Think about joined up talent management and automating that process as much as you can so you can put your efforts, if you're going into HR, put your efforts in actually to doing the things that make the difference, not into the process. HR is always thought of as costly and a process organisation. Obviously, somebody has to do that. But if you can automate most of it, then why not? I know training managers who go around doing health and safety training for their whole job. Well, what a waste of resource that is. Why don't they just put it online, get everybody doing it that way, you can track it that way, and get those people out doing things that are really, really important, like the art of conversation would be a good start, wouldn't it? More interesting. And embrace diversity, because we're not trying to say culture is about cloning. We're saying diversity is brilliant, and the more people that are different, great, you want them, but you want to unite them under a set of shared values and shared goals so that everybody can work together. And understand the dynamic. My last one is there's a free bit on our website called The Purple Revolution, where we send out once a month, I think it is, free stuff and just general bits of information. So, I mean, sign up to that. We won't hassle you for anything. It's just our way of giving back some stuff that we know, really. That's me. I'm going to stop now and hand over to Henrik.
Great.